This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, Lucha Lushes. This is Lucha Undead. Get to know the PTBN PWO, I guess, Boardwalk Audio Edition with Joey Clift from You Should Love Wrestling Podcast. Joey, how are you doing today?
Doing great, man. How you doing?
Doing pretty fantastic. I've got Adrian with me as my co-host as always. Adrian, how are you this beautiful afternoon?
Doing good, Tim. Doing good. The weather is nice outside. I'm sure it is where you are too, right? I mean, you're both in LA, right? So I'm assuming that you both are experiencing some good weather today.
Oh, yeah. We're recording this in the same room. So, the weather's the same for us.
Yeah, but we're going to pretend like we're over Skype so that it doesn't come across any different than any other episode of the podcast.
We got to keep kayfabe on this.
Yes, and I also just don't want to bleed familiarity between me and my guests. I'm not into it. We're just different classes of people, all right?
Yeah, I got it.
So, Joey, the concept of the show is, about internet fandom and specifically, wrestling journalist types with focus on the PWO, the Pro Wrestling Only board. So interesting first question that I always ask, because I'm not sure about your background when it comes to this. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the PWO board?
I don't believe that I have. My regular, internet wrestling surfing is usually like R-squared circle. Sometimes I check out kind of the former Wrestle Crap, now Freaking Awesome Network boards. I used to surf like RajaWWF.com all the time. But yeah, I don't think that I've ever actually been to the PW board. Is it good?
The PWO board. Yeah, it's a PWO board is kind of, I always point out to people who aren't familiar, it's famously in some ways, I think, like the inheritor of the DVDVR. A lot of people who used to be involved in that are there.
I know DVD. Yeah, like I've definitely read a lot of those. What is it? Just like Wrestling Road Stories or like Wrestling Rumors from like a while ago. I remember all those threads.
The what do they call it? The sleaze thread, as they call it, with all
I've surfed that many times.
But it's also kind of well known for being the place that started the kind of conversations about Shawn Michaels being terrible and Kurt Angle being one of the worst wrestlers of all time. And meanwhile, Earthquake is underrated for just how good he is. What the board is kind of about. Not necessarily contrarian for the sake of being contrarian, but people who maybe, look at wrestling with the same fervor that they do academic level studies of Shakespeare. That's kind of a little shout out for Parv there, who is that's the way that we look at wrestling over at the PWO. So for you, when you started out being a wrestling fan, was it when you were young? I mean, most people do start out as kids and come back to it later. Is that kind of the same path that you followed as a wrestling fan?
Okay, so my first big wrestling memory was, I think I was like, I forget exactly how old I was. It was like, I was 8 or 9 or something like that, maybe like 7. And I was flipping through the channels and I saw the Macho Man Randy Savage tied up in the ring ropes while Jake the Snake Roberts had Damien, and he made Damien bite Macho Man on the arm. And it was like complete chaos. It set up their feud. And like, as like an elementary school student, I definitely saw this and my mind was blown. Like, one, how is this even on TV? Two, like, is this guy going to get revenge? What's going to happen? And like, that just definitely made me like, one, talk to all of my friends at school about it. And like, have you seen this thing? This is surely going to get canceled any day now because of how insane this is. And then from then on, I just kept watching. I got my older brother into it. And I've definitely had ups and downs. I've always been a guy that's like, kind of kept up on the dirt sheets and like followed like the spoilers and stuff like that. But there are periods where I make it a point to watch everything every week, and then there are periods where like I'll sort of dip in and out. Like I feel like the mid to late 2000s, I think, is specifically kind of a dark spot for me. I didn't watch a lot of Chris Masters run. I heard he was great. That's probably about where I've been. I've always kept tabs, but my fandom kind of deviates from year to year, depending on, people I like getting pushed or whatever.
Okay, and so when you mentioned, you know, following dirt sheets and spoilers, and you even referenced RajaWWE.com or whatever. When was the first time that you realized, after you kind of stopped everybody on the playground and you're like, are you guys aware of these guys getting away with this crazy nonsense? And then when was the next step where you went like, hey, people talk about this on the internet? What was the kind of the first time you went on, you know, for me, it was, I remember searching AOL keyword wrestling to see what would happen. What was it for you?
Yeah, I feel like it was something similar. It was probably blind guess, like 1999. I remember one of the first things that I read was a news article suggesting that, like, the guy who GTV is based on was going to be Stevie Richards. And I was a big Stevie Richards fan at the time. So I was like, oh, yeah, great. And yeah, I feel like that's probably around when I first really started getting into just, like, you know, reading online message boards. I didn't even have a computer at the time. I would, like, go to the library and I would print out like dirt sheet articles, and I just had a stack of them in my room that I would occasionally flip through for some reason.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty interesting. So you just have like dated copies of, I don't know, the Torch or the Observer that you have.
Oh, not even the Torch. Library. It was literally just RajaWWF.com, like just like dirt sheet postings. I had just a stack of them in my room that was like growing every week.
Got it. Okay. And so then just every now and then, would you go through the retro ones, or was it just you'd read it and then save them? And or would you actually take the time to like go back and read older ones?
Okay. So this is why I think it was sort of a flawed thing to do, is like, I didn't go back and like flip through them. I think I was just like, oh, like, you know, like a rumor about who the higher power is going to be. I need to print this out and like save it for posterity. And then, and then, like, basically what I would do is I would, because I would really only go to the library like once a week, I would just straight up, I would go and I would find the exact spot where I left off the previous week. And I would spend 2 or 3 hours just like reading every single news posting from when I last checked to like, you know, that day. So it's like a week worth of wrestling news and rumors. But yeah, I don't think that I flipped back through old ones. They just felt like they were important to save, for lack of a better term.
Right. And so did you ever check out like the Torch or the Observer or any of like Pro Wrestling Spotlight or anything like that?
I mean, I really should. I mean, the short answer of it is no, but, I have friends that have written for the Torch and stuff like that. And I definitely know it's a good publication. And like, I'm sort of one of those like asshole fan. Wait, can I swear on this podcast?
As much as you want.
Oh, great. Yeah, great. So I'm sort of one of those asshole fans that, like, I definitely check out all the news and information from the Wrestling Observer and from Meltzer that's posted on R-Squared Circle, but I don't spend the $10 a month or whatever for it on my own, which I really just should, because, like, he's given me so much free information.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I said to Drake Younger, except for not about information, but when he didn't have any more shirts and he was trying to sell me King of Deathmatch DVDs one time, I said, I'm just going to give you $20 for all of your matches that I've stolen from the internet. How about that?
Yeah, that's
you know, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, yeah, I could probably get most of your information for free online, but why not throw you a couple bucks at this point?
Yeah, it's like, you're probably not going to read it every day, but it's like, I don't know, like, you probably owe him hundreds of dollars in just stolen matches, but like, whatever.
Do lesser known wrestlers like really depend on selling merch as part of like, you know, making money and stuff? Like, is that a big thing for them, is selling merchandise?
I mean, this is more less based on me knowing exactly how it goes and more just like, you know, like I work in the entertainment industry and stuff like that, and like it's probably that thing for lesser known wrestlers where they're not getting paid very much to do the show. So they try to kind of make up their gas money and stuff like that by selling merchandise, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's like normal for a lot of like, you know, musicians and stuff like that, where it's like, they're not getting paid a lot for this gig, or they maybe even took a little bit less, but the thought is, oh, they'll sell a shitload of DVDs and like, that'll make up for it.
Oh, okay. That's cool. I mean, it makes sense. Like you said, I mean, they are essentially just entertainers, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. No, they are real combat athletes fighting for their life every night.
Tim and I used to host a comedy show, and we had this one comedian, I think you remember Tim, Chris Shaw. And he would. I remember after the show, he was slinging his merchandise, like DVDs and shirts and whatnot. And I remember he had the little what's it called? The square. It's like that little thing you stick in your iPhone and you can swipe a credit card and stuff.
Yeah,
I'm wondering if either of you guys have ever seen like lesser known wrestlers do stuff like that. Like, have you seen guys like after a show like just selling their stuff, like, you know, like shirts or DVDs or whatever, like using, because that's got to be an interesting sight, right? I mean, to me, it would be. I think I would be kind of surprised if I saw that.
Okay, so a couple things. Colt Cabana actually for a little while made like a good amount of money by. He would go to Mexico and buy just boxes of cheap luchador masks for like $1 a piece or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he would like try to sell them at indie shows for $20 a piece. And like, these aren't Colt Cabana luchador masks. They just are luchador masks.
Right.
And like, he's an example of somebody that, like, I would say that he's a bigger known indie name, but like, there was definitely a time where like, that's just a way that he made money. And then I used to go to a lot of indie shows in kind of the early 2000s. And I remember Christopher Daniels, after WCW, before he was on, really, you know, before TNA was a thing, before he was in Ring of Honor or whatever, he did a few indie shows kind of near my hometown. And I remember him at the time. He had, like, you know, the Fallen Angel Volume 1, the Fallen Angel Volume 2 DVDs. Like, he was a great wrestler, but he was definitely, like, he wasn't quite the name that he is now. And he was definitely, like, hustling Fallen Angel t-shirts and stuff like that.
I mean, it's 100% ubiquitous now.
Yeah.
As Joey said, like, it used to be smart guys would have shirts and maybe some DVDs, and everybody else would just have nothing. And then now it's gotten to the point where everyone has shirts no matter what. And the smart guys have buttons, hats, stuffed animals, you know, they have everything. Yeah. And when you mention Christopher Daniels, I mean, he's one of the guys who it continues to be kind of someone who's going to push the vanguard of trying to make this money. Because when I saw him at ROH just recently, he had his comic book and he was standing there selling what essentially is a comic book that you can buy for, I think, like $5 to $10 online. And he was standing there saying, hey, you know, I'll sign it for you and it's $25. And he's selling copies to people at a big time wrestling show. But it was all about personality. I mean, I saw someone buy it and he came, it was a friend of mine, and he came back to me and he said, I wouldn't have bought it if it wasn't for him. Like, he talked me into it, and that it was all about hustling. So in some ways, wrestling has switched from, or wrestlers have switched from selling you the idea of wrestling is real to selling you the idea of spending your money on their merchandise in a lot of ways. Yeah. So that has happened.
Oh yeah. It's the exact same as like your favorite indie band. You know, it's like you want Grado to succeed, so you buy a Grado t-shirt because you like him as a person.
Yeah. I imagine you'd have to have a pretty enterprising spirit if you're an independent wrestler, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's the same case with, like, really any type of entertainment where you're not necessarily contracted, where, like, you know, musicians have to hustle. You're saying to your comedy friend, like, he's a guy that was, like, trying to hustle merch. It's just, like... when you're working freelance, especially like something like entertainment, it's just kind of, you definitely have to like be mindful of like, oh, like what's a way that I can get a little bit of extra money doing this? Cause like, you don't necessarily have like a Monday through Friday paycheck.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. And, I wanted to ask you, cause we talked about your fandom and you mentioned going to indie shows in the early 2000s. Because friend of the show, past guest, Sam from We Don't Know Wrestling, has actually devised kind of a scale of wrestling fandom that goes from casual to hardcore, which is about like if you're casual in your hardcore fandom or if you're some people are hardcore in their casual fandom. And it kind of denotes if you're into WWE only or if you also watch, you know, Japanese hardcore indies, stuff like that. When you were going to indie shows in the early 2000s, what kind of companies were you going for? Because you did strike me as a guy who was a little bit more in that hardcore casual range where you tend to follow maybe primarily just WWE at this point.
Yeah, I would definitely say that I'm probably like a hardcore casual fan in that like I mainly follow WWE. I, of course, watch like the Wrestle Kingdoms and stuff like that. Or if there's like a particularly good indie match that like strikes my fancy, I'll definitely like try to kind of track it down. I mean, I've also been to like PWG a couple times, but I wouldn't consider that like necessarily a hardcore fan thing. That's just it's just an LA thing at this point. But when I was younger, I went to ECCW a couple of times, Extreme Canadian Championship Wrestling.
Oh,
They're based out of Vancouver. The Bollywood Boys came from there. Mauro Ranallo also came from there. I think Daniel Bryan and a lot of those guys have kind of wrestled through it.
A really great match up there with Kyle O'Reilly versus El Fantasmo.
Oh yeah, they're like a good federation that's been around for a while. They are mainly kind of like Western Canada based, but I'm from Washington State. Every once in a while, they would like. I think that there was like maybe I want to say like. Let's say like a year where they were actively trying to kind of drive south to like the small town that I grew up in to do shows. They did like, this was shortly after ECW folded. So they, would do a lot of shows where it's like Tommy Dreamer or Nova or Chris Candido or whoever would be in the main event. Steve Corino, not Chris Candido. They did that like for a couple of shows and then it probably just didn't draw well. And then they eventually stopped and stuck around Canada. But, yeah, they're a good federation. There's also a place called, I think it's like Tulalip Championship Wrestling that is based like directly out of my small town. They fought out of the Boys and Girls Club that was right across the street from my elementary school. And Lance Storm has wrestled for them a couple of times. He wrestled specifically, I forget his name, but I think it was like the Figure Four Weekly guy, Brian Alvarez. They had a match there that Lance Storm wrote like a blog about. So I've been there a couple of times. So yeah, like I would say I'm not the guy that's driven, 6 hours out of my way to see a Ring of Honor show. But, I definitely try to like check out indie wrestling from time to time. So like hardcore casual is probably a good way to put it.
Yeah. And I mean, so obviously you have a lot of other stuff going on and you don't necessarily have the time to devote so much to it to be like a hardcore. Like some other people are, you know what I mean?
Oh,
so,
yeah. Like at this point, I just watch like 205 Live and NXT because I don't have time for Raw or SmackDown.
Right. I mean, I was actually just having that conversation yesterday as I was recording a podcast about wrestling. So you can kind of guess where I fall in the whole thing that I haven't watched Raw since Neville debuted. Debuted on Raw. That was the last time I watched a full episode. And then I was like, yeah, and I hadn't watched it for like 4 years before that. So it's just kind of like. I'm not a mainstream WWE guy. And it really comes down to the presentation of the product. As someone who does work, somewhat in, I would say indie comedy. I'm not 100% familiar with your work, unfortunately. When it comes to that, I'm sorry to say that, but it seems like you do.
Oh,
improv.
Damn! This interview is over.
I'm just not familiar with your comedy side. I've listened to the podcast quite a bit, and it's kind of funny to think that that's going to be like my introduction to you. And I even see some friends of that I know have been guests on your show once I kind of came across it, like Mike Rowe, who obviously has
Mike Rowe's the guy I was talking about. Yeah, he wrote for the Torch. Mike's a good guy.
Yeah, he was on our old podcast before, and. And Radcliffe, Matt McCarthy, you know what I mean? So it's just funny.
Yeah,
it's like,
great.
Oh, I probably would have met you at some point or something, but just hadn't happened. And then I find your show here and I don't even realize what you do. But for someone who does work on the lower end in comedy, you're not, doing the big time shows in front of thousands of people. Does that not relate in some ways to your fandom that you would want to be more like supporting smaller level wrestling, or you don't see it that way and you're just like, yeah, the big time one is just easily accessible, that's why I follow it? Or is there something to WWE that hooks you and makes you want to be primarily a fan of them?
I would say that it's largely time and accessibility. It's I'm like a busy person, so like it's just easier for me to spend my $9.99 a month for the WWE Network and kind of see all the stuff that they've sent me. I think I'm like a social wrestling fan when it comes to a lot of that other stuff. Like with Wrestle Kingdom, it's like, I will, happily go to a Wrestle Kingdom party and watch it with a group of people. Ring of Honor, I guess that I'm just not to the level of fandom to order DVDs, if that makes sense. Like, I think when I, uh, like, I remember when, like, you know, the Samoa Joe CM Punk feud was happening, hearing amazing things about it. And I was definitely, like, aware of them. I knew everything they were doing. But I just wasn't motivated enough to, like, go seek out the matches. So I would say, like, accessibility and time is probably that's probably what locks me to WWE. Though, like, I know that there's great stuff out there with, like, you know, Stardom and JPW and et cetera.
Yeah, and with everything becoming more readily available and a lot easier to get to with streaming services and even stuff like, you know, Flow Slam, High Spots Network, possibly Powerbomb TV, if it ever comes out. Do you think that there's any chance that you would switch over to something like that if you had multiple companies under one roof and the price point is similar to the WWE Network? Or do you think it's a little bit too consecrated in the WWE to ever do something like that?
I mean, I guess that something that I like about the WWE Network is that it's kind of a sampler platter of, you know, you can watch, you know, WCW Mid-90s Lucha. You can watch, like, Memphis Wrestling. You can watch, like, it's just like a good, it's a good, like, kind of sampler of all the styles of wrestling that you'd want to watch. If NJPW teamed up with, like, AAA or CMLL plus, like, Ring of Honor or something like that, then I would be more invested in going over. But it's like, you know, I think NJPW is great, but I'm just not invested enough to, like, watch, you know, every show they necessarily put out. Though I am really excited, and you probably know about this too, that, like, the rumor that the first night of the G1's probably going to be in Long Beach. Like, I'm definitely going to go to that. I'm excited about that.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be, I think that the dates are even announced. I'm not sure 100%, but it's going to be in July. It's going to be two nights. It's not going to officially be part of the G1, but it's G1 showcase, they said. And yeah, it's going to be in Long Beach. It's part of another event that's already being run by Bushiroad. So everyone kind of, if you know, you can kind of already figure out exactly when it's going to be. But they haven't officially, I don't think they've officially announced everything yet. But yeah, it's really exciting. But it's funny that you say those companies, because those are the companies that are working together. I mean, New Japan, CMLL, and ROH all seem to have working agreements, or at least they did. We'll see, kind of, there's a little bit of mix-ups and stuff going on right now. We'll see how it fans out. But it seems that those three companies are working together and putting something together. So it's kind of funny you say that, you know, without really thinking about it, that those are the companies that are kind of trying to work together to attack WWE. And meanwhile, there are multiple other companies working together doing something else on the other sides as well. So I think I'd like to hear that from someone who's maybe not 100% familiar with everything, that, you know, you would be open to something that's actually possible in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I definitely feel like if it was, you know, like, the WWE Network's an insane value, and if those companies teamed up to create something that was of similar value. Also, I feel like I definitely can see that the WWE is, like, steadfastly entering into monopoly territory with, you know, the UK tournament, you know, the rumors of the Japan tournament and stuff like that. If they go too far in that direction, I might cancel and go indie just to support the little guy. But if, like, Ring of Honor, NJPW, CMLL, and some other indie feds, like, you know, teamed up, I would probably be excited to give them my money.
Got it. So how did the podcast, the podcast that we're here to talk about, You Should Love Wrestling, how did the concept come together? Because it is kind of interesting. In some ways, it feels like it's like the dark version of We Watch Wrestling, how it originally started out, where it was Tom wasn't a wrestling fan, but he was excited to get into it. And you guys have the opposite, where, and I feel like a dick for not remembering his name right now.
That's Steven.
Steven, who's not a fan, seems to be totally against the idea of watching wrestling. So what was really the idea that brought you guys together?
Okay, so Nick, Steven, and I, we've been in sketch groups and we've performed together for probably going on about 4.5 years at this point. We've definitely accomplished some cool stuff together as a comedy group. We've had stuff featured on the front page of Reddit, Tosh.0, et cetera. And basically, whenever Nick and I are huge wrestling fans, so whenever Steven would leave the room or whenever we would do meetings at like Nick and I's apartment, Steven would enter and Nick and I would usually be talking about wrestling. Or if Steven went to the bathroom, he would come back and find out that we're talking about, like, you know, the Shield or Daniel Bryan's run or whatever. And he would always just be very annoyed by that. I mean, you can hear on the podcast, he's definitely a very like opinionated guy. So he'd be like, why are you guys talking about this bullshit? And, you know, we had the opportunity to, pitch a few podcasts and we basically like, you know, we worked together on a lot of different things, and it just kind of felt natural as a group for us to do a podcast. And just the one that we were the most excited about is like, oh, that'd be really fun to just force Steven to watch wrestling matches so that we could talk about it with our friends and have him get annoyed about it. And that's kind of where the germ of the idea came from. But there is an honest effort to get him, to try to get him to at least understand it. I feel like he's kind of, he's stubborn enough that I don't think that he's ever going to love it, but I do think that every episode we like slowly chip away and allow him to just like understand it better or understand why people like it better. So we recently had an episode that was kind of like a special that was just on Vader, and Steven didn't like the wrestling part of it, but he did really love that, just how happy Vader seemed to be to doing his job. And we've done episodes where we focused on like specific storylines, and he's like, I didn't like the matches, but I like how this storyline played out. Like, I don't think that we've released it yet, but we did an episode on like the Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth. And he was like, oh, the arc of their 7-year storyline was really cool. So it's kind of, it's sort of like when you feed a dog medicine, but you kind of wrap it in a treat. So we're kind of doing that where it's like, we're getting him to eat medicine, but like, he doesn't know that it's like, wrapped in a treat of like storylines and hanging out with people and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting concept and I like the show, but I did find that just recently there was an episode that it felt like it got a little bit contentious. Do you find that, is that regular occurrence? Is that even something that's possibly getting edited off the show where you guys are really getting into arguments and just getting upset and walking away from the conversation? Because there was times just recently where it felt like maybe Steven was moments away from getting so annoyed that he was going to quit. And he's even joked about quitting the podcast or even at least just leave the conversation. Is that something that's happened? Is that something you worry about? Or is a lot of that just played up for the podcast?
I would say that I've actually had a couple long conversations with him about this. Cause like ultimately we're all friends. I definitely think that recently, just because we've done it for about a year at this point, where we've recorded like 60 episodes or so, I definitely can feel that we have more, I guess, like contentious side arguments about wrestling. So like, I think it was the Macho Man episode. We kind of stopped talking about the Macho Man for 30 minutes and just got into a heated argument about wrestling, professional wrestling as a marketing strategy. And like, you know, like the fact that you can like play up, I used the example of, you heard the rumor that the Rock, Vin Diesel, Fast and Furious kind of onset feud, there's the rumor that's kind of a work to set up a potential WrestleMania match. And I was trying to explain to Steven that like, that's like a marketing strategy that was originated with professional wrestling that's designed to get people to care more about the next Fast and Furious movie or the next WrestleMania or whatever. And he was very like, I guess, he very much stood his ground and refused to believe that that's what was going on. And, you know, we got into it for like half an hour, but, you know, ultimately at the end of it, we're friends and, we don't edit anything out. You know, the closest that we've come to editing things out are, you know, sometimes the guest will like maybe say something about something, you know, we had former wrestlers on the show that'll maybe like they'll get into a topic that they realize afterwards, oh, I probably shouldn't have talked about that. But as far as me, Steven, and Nick's dynamic, we've never edited anything out. What you hear is basically what happens. And there have been many, many texts after recording episodes where either I've texted Steven or Steven's texted me being like, hey, bro, we're cool, right? And like, you know, and the answer is always like, yeah, man, it's just, we're fine.
Was that a dynamic to your guys' friendship and relationship before the podcast? Would you argue and fight about stuff, or was it always wrestling?
I would say that like, Stephen, Nick, and I are all separately, we're all separately opinionated people, and we definitely, the passion that we use to discuss comedy is oftentimes, or the passion that we use to discuss wrestling oftentimes goes into, you know, you could see that energy and passion transferring to us working on sketches together or whatever. And like, I've been in a lot of writers' rooms and I'm not like that normally. I think it's just sort of a, it's sort of like a brother dynamic, for lack of a better term. Does that make sense? It's like, you know, you kind of argue with your brother more than you'd argue with anybody else.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I think we'll take kind of a break here from talking about wrestling and podcasts and this podcast. And after that, we'll come back and kind of talk about the comedy and your other shows. And I think Adrian had some questions he wanted to ask you. Sound good?
Oh, yeah, I'm great for that.
All right.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, so we're back, because that's how we come back from breaks, is just saying that we are. So Joey, you host another podcast. It's 25 Minutes of Silence, correct?
Oh yeah, 25 Minutes of Silence.
It's a fantastic show, getting some of the most amazing guests around. Kind of how did that all come together, and what made you pursue that podcast as well?
Okay, so where 25 Minutes of Silence came from is you're Los Angeles based. You're in the comedy community, right? Or do you do stand up or anything?
No, not at the moment. But yeah, used to.
Oh, okay. But you're aware and you're around it. I mean, you know Mike Rowe and those guys. So yeah. Like, there's a tendency in Los Angeles comedy for basically every comedian to have their own podcast, and I feel like oftentimes people will have ideas for podcasts, but they won't have like a firm concept of it. Like, so I've listened to a lot of podcasts, and I know people that have podcasts where it's basically like, it's like three straight white male comedians sitting in their living room talking about whatever for 3 hours. And it's like, you know, maybe they'll talk about politics for 30 minutes. They don't really know a lot about politics, but man, are they ready to talk about it, kind of. So it's just like a trope within the Los Angeles comedy community. So off of that, I was like, oh, I should have my own podcast. And that'd be really funny if I had a podcast where a guest and I just sat in silence for 25 minutes. Because to me, it's like, that's just as valid as like three straight white male comedians talking about politics that they don't know anything about. So I came up with the idea. I pitched it to some people. They thought it was really funny. I recorded a few episodes. I reached out to Boardwalk Audio, and they were hesitantly on board, but they were down. And it's this weird thing where, like, I originally started doing the podcast just entirely as a joke, kind of to make fun of there being so many podcasts. And after I started recording the first episode, I started to realize that there was like artistic validity to it, which is insane to me. Like, I was recording, the first one I recorded was with Jeanette Bolito. She was a writer for Regular Show in their last season. She's also written for Powerpuff Girls and a lot of other stuff. She's a good friend and a very talented writer. And we were recording it at her apartment, and we were both like sitting on her couch. My microphone was recording, and like 5 minutes in, we were both like checking our emails and our phones, and we both like slouched on her couch at the same time, kind of like with a level of just extreme comfort that like you never experience when you're talking to somebody. It's just like, oh, I'm just sharing a space with this person. And it's like the podcast, it's weirdly like, it's more intimate than a conversation for 2 hours or whatever. Cause you're just like, you're like sitting quietly with somebody, but I don't know. That's like, that's me ranting and raving and like a lunatic about a dumb idea. But
I like the idea because, the last thing you want in this medium is silence, and you literally do a podcast of 25 minutes of silence.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, I started listening because I saw it on, I was perusing the Boardwalk Audio's website, their podcast and stuff, and I saw, oh, he has another one called 25 Minutes of Silence. And I thought, oh, that's just a gag title. Like, I'm sure he actually, because I was reading some of the guests you had on, I was like, oh, Emmy Award-winning comedy writer Mike Upchurch. This should be an interesting episode. And I started playing it. I'm like, wait a minute. This is literally 25 minutes of silence.
Yeah. It's very, my favorite part about the show is reaching out to guests. Like, I have a former astronaut on the show, literally a guy that for a time held the record for the longest time in space. Uh-huh. He fought the largest ever in-space fire when he was on the Mir space station. Like, ooh. Part of Mir caught fire while he was in space, and him and a bunch of cosmonauts had to, like, put it out in an extreme panic, I'm sure. And instead of asking that guy any questions, we just sat quietly for 25 minutes while he cleaned out his rain gutter over Skype.
I think, first of all, the last thing you want in space is a fire, right?
And But like to get that guy,
I was gonna say you have to assume that it was an extreme panic because you didn't get a chance to actually talk to him about it.
Oh yeah, totally. So like, but like, in order to get that guy, I had to call and email 20 other former astronauts just to get one to say yes.
Wow.
A couple of places have done write ups on it. Like Splitsider named it a podcast of the week a few weeks ago. Nice. The Daily Dot did a big write up on it, and it's like. I'm trying to think of other examples. There are some people that are instantly on board. Like, I had the lead singer of the Presidency of the United States of America on the show, and he was instantly down. Like, when I pitched him the idea, he was just like, yeah, that sounds fun. But then, like, I had, what was it? Like, one of the top third-party presidential candidates. I had a 15-minute-long phone conversation with them where, like, basically, they just kept asking me over and over again, wait, so what's this again? And then they finally said they'll do the show, but they'll only record the intro and the outro, but not actually sit in silence with me for 25 minutes. And I told them no deal.
Yeah. So you have to hold the integrity of the show.
Yeah.
I have to ask. So what do you do for 25? Is it awkward for 25 minutes? Like, you're sitting there, you're recording. I mean, are you guys looking at each other? Are you guys checking your phone? Like, what are you guys doing, like, physically for 25 minutes since you're not talking?
I mean, I basically leave that kind of open to whoever I'm doing the show with because, like, you know, most of the people that I'm doing the show with, I don't know. They're complete strangers. And this is sort of – it's definitely a – weird ask for me to ask somebody to sit in silence with me for 25 minutes.
Right.
So I'm basically like, read a book, check your phone, do whatever. there are some people like my friend Tiana Riesenhofer. She wrote on the new Jill Soloway Amazon show, and she was one of the leads in the TBS show Clipped. She's a good friend, very funny performer and writer, and like I'm friends with her, so we worked on a puzzle for the 25 minutes. And then I had like the guy who created the game Maniac Mansion, the developer of it, Ron Gilbert, and he just, we did it over Skype, and he just used the time to like, he just fixed bugs on a game that he's got coming out.
You know who you should have on the show, Joey, if I may make a suggestion? You
should
have a Justice of the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, on the show, because he never says anything. So that would be, that'd be a good get, I think, if you had him on.
I might, I'll try to, okay, I will, I'm going to drop this right now. It's probably, I ask a lot of people to do the show and get a lot of either no's or non-responses or last minute cancellations when they figure out what the show is. I'll like send a letter to him to try to work that out. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe it will. Yeah, yeah. That would be crazy. I have to have a standing Supreme Court justice on the show.
Yeah, a Supreme Court justice who's famous for never saying anything.
Yeah, he's a great
perfect. Like that'd be. You think he would want to do the show because he would literally have to say nothing to you? You know.
Somebody I was trying to reach out to, or something I was trying to reach out to, rather, is there's a dog that is the mayor of a town somewhere in California. It's, I think it's like Idlewild or something like that. And like the dog has a website, and they're the legitimate legal mayor of this town. And I sent their owner an email and was like, "Can I have your dog as a guest on my podcast?" They did not respond. Yeah, it's fun. I mean, no, it's fun. It's like
the owner of that dog is not trying to turn his mayordom into a joke. It's a very serious.
Oh yeah.
Mayoral position for that dog.
Yeah, I'm sure that they're like, yeah, like we don't. Like this is a don't disparage the high honor of the dog mayor of Idlewild.
that's kind of like you said. I mean, I wonder if like in 1,000 years when people are looking back at old media and podcasts, someone will stumble upon yours and think, "Wow, like this is like what could this mean? Like what's the story behind this?" You know what I mean? Like it'll be one of those things.
Now, I listen to podcasts sped up. How do you feel about someone listening to 25 minutes of silence on 3x speed?
I'm okay with that. Like, I don't know. Do whatever you want to do. A lot of my friends...
Doesn't affect the artistic integrity.
I mean, I don't know. Like, do whatever. I'm cool with it.
I was going through your website, joycliff.com. I was looking at your resume. You've written for a lot of different websites. Sarcasm Society, Guff.com, Maker Studios. Isn't Maker Studios isn't that owned by Disney, I think, now?
Yeah.
I saw Cracked.com, which I used to read like on a daily basis. Like, I don't read it anymore. There's a lot of good stuff on there, and I used to read that a lot. How did you like writing for them, by the way?
It was good. I've written on National Geographic shows. I've written for, not my resume yet, but in 2016, I did a bunch of writing for DreamWorks, and I wrote on like a Shrek web series that they had, and like a kid's sketch show they had. And I wrote for they have this show called 25 Facts, where it's sort of like a factual, a fact-based show. So I've written for like a couple of places where the point of it is to post facts in an entertaining manner. It's kind of like lightly comedic, where it's like you say something interesting, but you have like jokes kind of crammed in there. Of all the places I've written for, Cracked is the most fact-checky of all of them.
Oh,
like
really?
they're more intense than National Geographic when it comes to making sure that stuff is accurate.
Nice.
But it's good. It's, you know, it's some of the best writing on the internet, I think. I'm definitely, you know, proud to have that on my resume and proud that I've written for a couple of things for them. They're a fun place to write for.
And another thing I wanted to ask you about, and this is sort of off topic, but on your website, you have in your about section, my favorite line of the whole thing is at the very end. It says, "He is a proud member of the Kalitz Indian tribe, and he doesn't know why his beard is that color either." I wanted to ask you, I have a very red beard. Tim has a very red beard. Do people ever like ask you like, "Oh my God, why is your beard so red?" And your head hair is like a completely different color. Like, are people always shocked by that when they see like the color of your beard and contrasted against the color of your head hair?
Oh, constantly. People think that I dye my hair. People think that I dye my beard. It's like, I'm sure that you guys know how it goes. It's like people will ask me that unprovoked, like that I don't really even know that well. Just like, "Hey, did you dye your hair? Do you dye your hair?" And I'll be like, no, just my beard is a weird color. I don't know.
It's got to be some kind of, I don't know, genetic thing, right? I mean, that your beard hair is a different color than your head hair. I mean, how does that even happen, you know? It's weird.
I mean, I recently read an article about it. Like, there was, like, a study that came out, like, I think in, like, mid to late 2016 that was, like, it means that you've got one recessive red hair gene or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Like, there is a scientific explanation for it. But, yeah, I don't know. We're all just weirdos, I guess.
Yeah, because Tim has a very red beard. I think Tim, your beard is way redder than mine, right? If I remember correctly.
I guess it has gotten that way over the years. So, yeah. And, yeah, I get people who don't believe, they think that I'm actually a redhead, and they don't believe that my hair isn't red because of how red my beard is. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and your natural hair color, Tim, is like, you sort of had, I think when you were younger, you had sort of a, like a dirtyish blonde color in your hair, your head hair, right?
Yeah, it's like dark brown.
It's dark brown.
Wait, are you guys like childhood friends?
No, but I mean, I've known Tim since high school. We weren't friends in high school. But,
were you enemies in high school?
We were not. No, well, I mean, I knew, I had him in one class, but that was it. We never really talked or hung out. So it was until like after I got back from college that we started hanging out. So it's kind of funny how that worked out.
It was like wrestling the thing that you guys connected on?
No. Cause you don't know. I'm sorry. I'm not really the wrestling fan of the two of us. I'm actually just like kind of like your friend on your show, but not as like Tim doesn't try to convince me to like wrestling. We just, you know, happen to do that. Cause we used to do this show about Lucha Underground. And the idea was we would both watch an episode and then we would just talk about it and stuff. We don't do that anymore. But we started doing, I think we started hanging out, Tim, cause we started doing sketches together. We used to do sketch comedy as well back in the day.
Oh, cool. Did you through any particular theater or just through wherever?
Oh no, we'd film them and then upload them to YouTube and Funny or Die and then just share them on social media and stuff. I could probably send you some links later, but yeah, we used to do sketch comedy. We used to host a stand-up show in Palm Springs as well. And then we started doing a podcast, our old podcast, the Poor Decisions podcast. That's why I was laughing earlier, because you were saying just dudes sitting around the living room talking about whatever. That's literally what we did on the old show. We just like sat around the four or five of us and just basically just shot the shit about whatever. And that's, I think the idea was initially poor decisions, like talk about your poor decisions. But then we sort of realized, right, Tim, was that every podcast is pretty much just talking about poor decisions. So, not too of an original conceit, I guess you could say.
Well, I think it's like podcasts are, it's weird because like some of my favorite podcasts are just a couple people kind of shooting the shit. And so it's like, not to discredit that as like a valid thing, but it's like, I think that my thing about that is that just anybody can have a podcast, and it's like, ultimately, I think it depends on if the people are interesting or not, you know? Like, it's like, you know, like, there are a lot of podcasts like that, you know, like, WTF is essentially that, and that's a great podcast, but it's just like, there's so many of them, there's so many podcasts like that.
There's almost too many. I feel like it's oversaturated at this point, but I guess it's cool at the same time. I mean, it just shows you that, like, you know, anybody can get their thoughts out there and stuff. You know, and there isn't that much of a limitation anymore to doing this stuff. So that's just a good thing. Do you listen to higher produced podcasts, like stuff from NPR or things like that, like This American Life, or do you like, what do you mostly like to listen to? Do you have a varied taste in podcasts?
Okay, so this is going to sound very lame. I listen to my own podcast a lot, You Should Love Wrestling, specifically because I'm the guy that, like, I quality control it before we release it.
Oh, okay.
So, like, you know, I listen to it for, like, pops and stuff like that. And so, like, when I'm not, like, being a weird egotistical asshole, I guess, just listening to my own podcast, I listen to, you know, I think Doughboys is really good. That's a podcast on Feral. Can I Pet Your Dogs, a Max Fun podcast. That's really good. Just about, you know, it's Allegra and Renee. They're both friends of mine. They just really love dogs and they talk about them. And, you know, there are some, like, you know, This American Life is definitely a podcast that I think is pretty good. I listen to a handful. I'm not like quite the connoisseur that I probably should be, but, you know, I definitely think there's some, like, good, cool stuff happening in the podcast media.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I started listening to this one podcast, like you're saying, just nerds or people just shooting the shit. There's a show called Real Nerd Hours. You should check that out.
Yeah.
I think you've heard of that one, right? That's
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, the guy that hosts that, he was on the Dick Show, which I believe you were on the Dick Show a while back, right?
Yeah. I was one of their first guests. I'm I know those guys.
Yeah, I remember listening to that. That was a good episode. Back when
it was. Although I feel bad because I didn't really know when Dick asked me to do the show, I didn't really know what the concept was, so I didn't know that I had to come in with something that I was mad about or something that I was raging about. So, when I said, oh, I'm raging about people not listening to my podcast or whatever, I didn't know that was the format of the show. So, I realized afterwards, oh, that's very lame of me to do that.
Did you go on Reddit and read the comments afterwards about that? Is that how you sort of found out? Or?
Okay, yeah. So what I did was I definitely read the comments. And, you know, their Dick's fan base is, I guess, very vocal, for lack of a better term, very opinionated. And a lot of people were posting, I hope that this guy gets AIDS and dies. And I responded anonymously, because they don't know what my Reddit account is. I responded, yeah, fuck that guy. me too. Yeah, that guy's the worst.
That's
hilarious. All their comments, I would post, just under my Reddit account, I would just post agreements of yeah, that guy's voice is dumb.
That's what's great about the internet is that people just feel free to take everything to the extreme. There's almost no middle ground anymore, you know? It's I hope you get AIDS and die. That's it. It's either that or nothing. That's just the way it is in internet comments. That's why people always say, just don't read the comments. Just skip the comments, you know?
I mean, I think it's I've made a lot of stuff for the internet. And I think that you can't look at internet comments as an honest critique of your work, because it's 12-year-olds who are really excited that they can use the F word, and everybody sucks when they're 12. I really more read the comments for those ones where it's just I don't know, there was one of the worst comments that I got. I don't even want to repeat it on air because it had so many slurs in it. And it was just very offensive and horrible and kind of one of the worst things you could say. I clicked on the guy's YouTube profile. He was a 9-year-old kid. And it's well, that's fun. That's funny to me that a 9-year-old kid said that. I can't take that as something to be offended about, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of funny, a 9-year-old kid just attacking you online that way.
Yeah, it's why would you take that personally? Because that's it's a 9-year-old kid. It's you know.
There was this movie, I don't know if you guys ever saw, and I can't remember the name of it. It was John Travolta was in it. And there's this scene where not John Travolta, I'm sorry, I'm thinking about a different movie. But basically the guy gets upset because he directs a theater play and he gets a really bad review from the local school, paper writer. And it's just a 9-year-old kid. And he begs him to write a better review for his show.
That's very funny and sad.
Yeah. You're mixing that up from real life John Travolta. That was his reaction to the Beaver getting negative reviews from a local Los Angeles play or middle school.
Did that really happen?
No, of course that didn't happen.
Oh, got it, got it. Yeah.
The Beaver.
Yeah, do you remember The Beaver? That was a good movie.
That was Mel Gibson, not John Travolta.
Oh, I mixed up John Travolta and Mel Gibson.
I don't know how that's possible.
John Travolta was complaining to that school is he was like, "You're mixing me up with Mel Gibson. That's very offensive."
Did you guys see the clip of him at the Oscars or something where he says this actress's name and he completely fucks it up? Did you guys ever see that clip?
Yeah. Where it was like Aziel, whatever.
The beautiful Aziel.
Yeah.
Oh, Johnny Travolta. Whatever.
It's
happened
to you. You're doing your best.
Yeah.
He's just trying. Some of these names are getting wacky and hard to pronounce.
Yeah, that's something that the Academy should just really suss out. Is just make names easier.
Yeah. Well, it's because you have to give a different name, and if someone else is already registered in SAG, you can't have the same name. So you have to pick something different. That's why he's Michael J. Fox, because there was a Michael Fox in the '60s or something that no one cares about. So. I mean, let's just start recycling names. Let's start back over. Bob Smith and Jane Doe, and we can start from the beginning with some regular, good old fashioned American names first.
I mean, I'm not in SAG or WGA yet, but like, if that happens to me, I'm 100% gonna make my name like Snake Danger, like or like Stone Cold Edwards, or like
Stone Cold Edwards is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, it's gonna be. Like, I'm basically just going to take two wrestlers that I like and slam their names together.
Although that could go, that could also go very awry.
Yeah, whatever.
That's fine. It'll work out. I don't know. Adrian, did you have any more questions?
I started just had a general question for just for the room in general was I asked you, Tim, about Booty-O's last time. I texted you, remember? And I'm still wondering, what is the deal with Booty-O's? Is it just like part of these guys' prop and part of their like whole thing, or what's up with that? What's up with that?
I mean, that might be a good question for Joey, I guess. Joey, can you explain Booty-O's?
Okay, so I feel like the New Day's thing. I mean, the kayfabe explanation is like, you know, to be booty is a bad thing. That's established on TV that you don't want to be booty.
You don't want to be booty.
And, yeah, you don't want to be booty. Booty is a bad thing. Booty means something sucks or is awful or whatever. And Booty-O's are a cereal that are designed to make sure that you are not booty. So Booty-O's is a good thing that prevents you from being bad. Well, like that's the kayfabe, you know, logic, if this, then this, you know, reasoning for it. Gotcha. But like, really, I feel like so much of the New Day stuff is like, they're just three friends that crack each other up on the road, and like, then they probably just went to Vince and were like, hey, can we have our own cereal called Booty-O's? And Vince was like, your t-shirts are selling well, so sure.
So are they part of a balanced breakfast Booty-O's?
I mean, yeah, I think that you probably also want to have like a banana or something with them, but like, they're like part of a balanced breakfast, not an entire balanced breakfast.
I love the name. I just love the name. Like, I saw. I don't know anything about wrestling, as I said, I'm not really the wrestling fan. But I've seen those guys. I've seen the shirts, and I've seen the big. I saw a clip of them busting out of a big box of Booty-O's, and I was like, "What is the deal with Booty-O's?" But yeah, that was pretty much it. I just wanted to know about Booty-O's. I couldn't leave this episode without finding out about that. So
yeah.
Well, I guess we'll take our last break, and then there's one final thing that we can't leave without finding out, which will be asking Joey the final question.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
All right, we're back, and Adrian, it is time for
the final question.
The final question. That is our big production value for these shows.
Did you just shout that into like a bucket or something?
No, I got a pretty cool filter thing in my mixer here. So.
No. He does it manual style. So Joey, we kind of talked about your background, you know, with your other podcast, comedy, your wrestling fandom, and all that. Didn't really get too deep into your life. Unfortunately, we just kind of didn't have time because we got too busy shooting the shit and joking around with you. Maybe we'll have to have you come back and we could talk about the childhood and the background and all that other stuff that we like to get into on this show. But before we let you go, I have to know one thing, that if someone only knew you from your podcasts, only knew you from the personality that you put out to the public for public consumption, what was something that would shock them about you?
Okay. So something that would shock people about me is, my like arms and elbows are, they have like, I can like hyperextend them without any sort of ill effect. Double jointed is often what people call them.
Huh.
So I can, if I lay my hand flat on a table, I can twist it in 360 degrees and like without any sort of pain or anything like that. And I basically, learning this when I was like 6 years old, I became kind of an amateur contortionist. So I remember I was taking a Japanese class in high school, and I while I was sitting in class and not paying attention to the lesson, I realized that if I put both of my hands behind my back and clasp them, I can adjust my shoulders and arms in such a way that I can bring my arms completely over my head and into the front of my body, like without releasing them. I got a D minus in that class. And then I can fit in boxes and I can fit through tennis rackets and stuff like that. I don't do it as much anymore, but I used to do kind of like street performing with it. There were a couple of times where a friend of mine would ask me to do it in an airport and I would do it. And then what always happens is like somebody else sees me do it from 10 feet away and they're like, hey, do that again. And then 10 more people see it happen. And I've done it to the point where I've had crowds of hundreds of people around me watching me do this weird thing at an airport or in a hospital or whatever.
Do you put out a little bucket for people to throw cash in and stuff, or do they just?
No, I really, I mean, only the couple of times that I've done legit street performing did I do that. But usually it's it's just I really wish I had here's my Venmo, donate to my Venmo account.
Dude, I've seen people do the twisting their arm in three. It's so creepy. No offense, but it's just so creepy looking when they do that, when you twist your hand all the way. I don't know. It's, you know what I mean? Do people react? How do they react
when
they
see you doing this shit? People are horrified. I have a couple of friends that are genuinely in the way that some people are afraid of seeing blood or kind of get really queasy when they see blood. I have some friends that get really queasy when they see weird skeletal stuff, and they have to leave the room when I do it.
Wow. Well, that is interesting.
Yeah, that's something else. And it is a first for us. We haven't had anybody who was an amateur.
Contortionist.
That's never been anyone's thing before. So you definitely impressed us with that.
Oh, great. I did it.
You did it. So Joey, again, we talked about You Should Love Wrestling, 25 Minutes of Silence. What else do you want to plug out there for anybody who happens to be listening to this?
You can follow me on Twitter at Joey Tainment. Be sure and check out my sketch group with the You Should Love Wrestling guys, Local Business Comedy. We've recorded a couple of full album parodies that have done pretty well online. We made an album called Croesus that was a complete parody of Kanye West's Yeezus, except instead of him thinking he's Jesus, he thinks he's Santa Claus. It got featured on, MTV, Billboard, and stuff like that. So give that a listen. You can check out some of my writings and stuff like that on crack.com. I don't know. Just Google my name. Stuff will probably come up.
I just Googled Local Business Comedy. I'm going to check that channel out right now. All right. And for those of you listening, you guys should check out Boardwalk Audio's website. And obviously, Joey's podcast is on there. There's another podcast that I was listening to before we started recording called Right On with Scott Boxenbaum. And he has conversations with TV and film writers. So if anyone – I'm obviously interested in that type of thing. But there's a lot of good-sounding shows on there. So you should definitely check out the Boardwalk Audio website.
It's a great network. Gonna maybe bust kayfabe a little bit. Steven Perlstein, he's sort of the mastermind in charge of it. He's previously worked at a lot of other kind of podcast networks, and he does a really good job of curating a lot of great podcasts. And I really hate him for not liking wrestling, but he's a good dude. He works hard in his network, and BoardwalkAudio.com there's a lot of great shows on it.
Nice. All right.
Yeah. No. Definitely check it out. I'm already instantly becoming a big fan of the podcast and of the network in general. So I'd recommend everyone go check it out. Otherwise, nothing new for me. Just follow on Twitter at Lucha Undead to find out about everything I'm doing. Adrian, you need to plug before we go?
Yes. Follow me at Della Boots. Follow my other podcast at Story Germ. Of course, I have another podcast, right?
We all have 10 podcasts. Yeah,
exactly. And that's about it. That's about it, Tim.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Joey. And as always, here on Lucha Undead, we like to close out by reminding people of the most important things in life, which are the three Bs: good beers, good buds, and good banter. Good night.